Vitamin C has evolved. Altrient Vitamin C is a cutting-edge liposomal liquid food supplement designed for maximized absorption. Discover Altrient Liposomal Vitamin C and receive 10% discount by quoting HR10 at abundanceandhealth.com.
Yes Live Show on UK Health Radio. I'm the host for the show, Robin Daly, and I founded the UK charity Yes to Life that the show's named after, that works on behalf of patients with cancer to improve access to the many benefits of integrative medicine. Today, I'm honoured to have a brilliant integrative oncologist as my guest to talk about the crucial topic of inflammation. Dr. Wafe Abdelhadi is speaking to me today from her home in Egypt. Hi, Wafe. Big welcome to the Yes Live Show.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.
Great stuff. So you're Egyptian. I think this is a first for the Yes Live Show to have an Egyptian guest. But I believe you're very familiar with the UK and even with our own NHS.
Of course, I've worked at the NHS as a visiting doctor for almost a year. And my brother, actually, he's a resident in the UK since 1997. So London is my backyard.
Okay.
Love every little piece of it.
Wonderful. Okay. I think it's fair to say that you've got some very broad views about what cancer care should look like, but I think it's fair to say that they're not really representative of general attitudes to cancer care in Egypt.
Yeah, well, it's different in the Middle East, in Europe, and even in the States at how doctors, oncologists take a look at cancer per se. Here, we're in the Middle East, we just go with the conventional, straightforward, according to international guidelines, whether following the American Society of Clinical Oncology, the European Society of Medical Oncology, or the NCCN guidelines, which is the Natural Comprehensive Cancer Network, that actually the latter one has a part for patients to learn about their disease and for the doctors as well. So it's just a straightforward recommendations. However, after 13 or 15 actually years of working as a conventional oncologist, I finally had like a wake up moment, like there is more into cancer rather than just bombarding my patients with chemicals and radiation, which is actually very important in acute cases. However, we should take a look at the body and its miraculous healing powers and give the body its tool to heal and actually help you get over cancer.
Brilliant. Okay. So the subject we decided to home in on today is inflammation. It's a word we hear a lot these days, not just in integrative circles. It's talked about in the mainstream now, and it's talked about in connection with a lot more than just cancer, really. Would you start out by putting inflammation in context and saying something about the relationship between inflammation and chronic disease?
Well, inflammation is actually a contributor in most of diseases. Like obesity causes inflammation, and inflammation causes obesity, diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis, even because it's inflammation. It's not just fire in a hole, if you know what I mean. It's just that increasing level of toxins or attacks of inflammation, and the way that we tackle inflammation from the conventional point of view is like giving the ibuprofen or giving those anti-inflammatory medications. You don't actually reach to a resolution of inflammation. That leads to the chronicity of an inflammation, where the cells like die and wither, and that leads to immune disturbances. For instance, if you have an ulcer in your oral cavity, in your buccal mucosa, in your mouth, and then that ulcer is due to a tooth that is like not aligned properly with the rest of the teeth. So it will keep irritating the buccal mucosa, keeps irritating it. What would we do? We'd give like an anti-inflammatory or like an anti-ulcer medication. However, the root cause is the tooth. So if we remove the tooth, the inflammation will go away. If the tooth keeps irritating the buccal mucosa, it will lead to chronic inflammation. The immune cells will not be able to heal that inflammation, and that might lead eventually to either a chronic ulcer or up to squamous cell carcinoma in the oral cavity.
Right.
So we have to deal carefully with inflammation. When someone has acute rheumatoid arthritis, this is inflammation of the joints. So we have to know, why did that person get inflammation in his joint? We see rheumatoid arthritis in the 80s and 90s. Why is it happening in the 20s and 30s these days?
Right. Good question. Okay, so it's easy then to characterize inflammation as the bad guy, but of course it does have a positive role, doesn't it? Do you want to distinguish between sort of good inflammation and bad inflammation?
Absolutely. So when you have, so the five cardinals of inflammation is, as the Greek said it, like tumor, rubor, calor, dolor.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? Yeah. Is that if you hit your elbow, it will swell. This is tumor. It will swell. It will become red and it will become hot. And the redness and hotness indicates that the immune system, they are calling the immune system to cause inflammation here to heal the injured tissue. And then the pain comes from something called inflammatory cytokines that is also in the healing process. So this is a benign or a good inflammatory process to heal the injured elbow. Then you go to the doctor, he fixes this elbow for you for a couple of days or even a week until this inflammation goes away. If this inflammation doesn't go away, or if that person doesn't is eating, we're going to talk about the causes of inflammation, like inflammatory food, inflammatory lifestyle, and inflammatory environmental factors. However, if that person doesn't treat his inflammation properly, what will happen is persistent inflammation in that elbow that might heal by fibrosis and then loss of function. So we have to, acute inflammation is extremely important. If we, this is an example about the elbow. If you talk about inflammation in the respiratory tract, like someone has an acute cough, etc., you give him steroids. Steroids is a brilliant anti-inflammatory. However, we should always treat it in the acute phase only and not use steroids on the long term, because on the long term, it suppresses the immune system. So a doctor actually in the Middle Eastern, we tell the doctor Hakim. Hakim is the wise man.
Right.
Where you can use which nutraceuticals or medicine in the right amount at the right moment to prevent loss of function or loss of the good part of that medicine. We use the steroids in the acute phase and not in the chronic phase. In the chronic phase, something like the bronchial asthma, for instance, kids use the steroids for very long term. However, from the functional medicine point of view, if you just go back and see why that patient has bronchial asthma, you can then give omega-3 fatty acid, quercetin, and all of these nettle sting, and all of these natural components that actually have an anti-inflammatory and anti-asthmatic effect, so that he wouldn't be using an immunosuppressant lifelong.
Well, it's interesting because, it's very often said that conventional medicine is absolutely excellent for acute situations. And, if you have a heart attack, it's flipping brilliant, what they can do. And you're really saying the same thing, that when these type of medications are used around a chronic condition, there can be an acute phase of a chronic condition which needs to be dealt with. But then it's not the answer to the chronic condition itself.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so inflammation's kind of a good thing that's got out of control, and this seems to be a picture of chronic disease that's becoming increasingly common. I mean, some aspects of our lifestyle is fueling a normal function to become overactive, and that can lead to serious issues, particularly when it's over a very long and extended period. So I'm thinking things like diabetes and autoimmunity and that kind of thing, which are similarly runaway conditions.
So lifestyle, for instance, if you have a bad dietary intake, like if you're eating sugar, gluten, dairy, and we can like discuss everyone in brief and get the evidence behind why these foods are inflammatory. If you're a tobacco smoker and you are not you do not detox, you don't have the gene for detoxifying the tobacco properly. If you have low physical activity, if someone is a long user of alcohol or drug abuse, those things affect the heart, the diabetes, the total cholesterol, and on the long run can cause something called a global burden of disease. So like you said, if someone has an acute heart attack, well, conventional medicine, of course, he has to go to the hospital and they do like those tests to see if he needs an angioplasty right away or he should wait. They give him like those blood thinners, etc. However, we should go take a step backwards and said, what caused the heart attack? Was it inflammation in the vessels around the heart, the coronary vessels? And what causes this inflammation? Is it high cholesterol? And what caused that high cholesterolemia? Is it bad food? Is it high sugar or high bad fats? So we should go like back to the root cause of the disease, because they always blame high cholesterol of being the bad guy when it's not.
Yeah. Okay. Ask the question. So I want to talk a little bit now about the signs of inflammation. Firstly, what are the pointers that we can pick up ourselves, the things that we can see or we can feel in our own bodies that could be symptoms of underlying inflammation?
Yes, absolutely. So for instance, how do we say that? There are a lot of things that, so there are the five cardinal signs of inflammation, as we have discussed, like the swelling, redness, hotness, and pain causing limitation of movement. So this is inflammation. So if we just used how do we say, like if someone has a rash, is it an allergy, intolerance, stress? If we have like palpitation, is it like the thyroid or the heart? If you have numbness in the hands or feet, is it diabetes? Inflammation is very wide. Sometimes you can have inflammation in your gut and it causes diarrhea, and people just call it inflammatory bowel disease. Sometimes you can have inflammation in your from eating a lot of sugar, and then you have headaches and brain fog. So there are different types of inflammation, but to pinpoint the signs and symptoms, you just have to listen to your body and see why it's not in sync.
Okay, and how about actually measuring it? What's available within and also beyond conventional medicine can tell us how established inflammation is?
So we get like a CBC, a complete, in the UK it's a FBC, full blood picture, full blood count.
Right.
So we get a full blood. We check the white blood counts if it's elevated, and then beyond the white blood counts, there is something called differential counts, and that can actually tell us if it was a bacterial, viral, or a parasitic infestation. And then we have the CRP, the C-reactive protein. We have the ESR, the erythrocyte sedimentation rate. We have the ferritin ratio. I know that ferritin is like a reflection of the iron stores in the body. However, when the ferritin is high, this is an acute phase reactant. We have many things to measure inflammation. Those are like the mainstay or the main ones that we measure inflammation with. And then according to which organ is affected, for instance, for alcoholism, we measure the liver functions. For instance, for the heart, we measure the homocysteine levels, for the coronary arteries inflammation. And because the homocysteine can reflect the endothelial lining of the blood vessels if it's inflamed. Yeah, so those are the main like indicators of inflammation in the blood tests in general.
Right, and those are all available within conventional medicine. Yeah.
Yes.
They are, right. Okay. So that's good. So if we suspect there's something untoward, we can go down and get a full blood test, and this should pick up anything like that.
So the main thing, like if you're going to pick two tests to measure inflammation, that should be the CRP and the full blood counts.
And the CRP is what?
The C-reactive protein.
Oh, the C-reactive, yeah, right.
Because the C-reactive protein, can actually be, so it can be elevated in rheumatoid arthritis, it can be elevated in a sore throat, it can be elevated if someone like sprained his ankle, so it can be elevated in chest infection. So right. So in order to measure, it's very sensitive, the C-reactive protein. So it's one of the most important thing if you want to see if it's bacterial or viral. Like if it's viral, then you will have more lymphocytes. Unlike the COVID-19, now it has lymphopenia in the complete blood picture when we see it. But if you have a viral infection like Epstein-Barr virus, CMV, you will have monocytosis, increased monocytes.
Right. So it's like a first step. You've got to do more investigations afterwards to find out exactly what's causing that reading, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, that's great. Now, I'd like to get a bit specific about the relationship between inflammation and cancer. So, firstly, do we know, is inflammation always a component of every cancer?
Not always.
No.
So, C-reactive protein, actually, can be elevated when tumor markers are not.
Right.
So I know that you always have Dr. Nasha Winters in your show,
yeah,
in your conferences and in your on your radio talk.
Yeah.
So you have like always like, and I'm actually working alongside Dr. Nasha these days. So we check something called the trifecta, CRP, ESR, and LDH. If the three of them are elevated, which two of them are an inflammatory marker, CRP and ESR, and the LDH, actually, it's a marker of how your mitochondria is suffering.
Right. So this.
So if the three of them are elevated, then there is a cancerous process happening on in your body.
Right. Okay. So that you need all three to give you the full picture that it's definitely something to do with cancer. And so that third one, the mitochondria, just to be clear, that's to do with the energy of the cells and how well that's functioning, yeah?
Yes, it's called lactate dehydrogenase enzyme. And there is something like called Krebs cycle. And Krebs cycle, it happens inside the mitochondria where the energy comes out. And now we have, of course, the metabolic theory behind cancer, that cancer is not a genetic disease. And if your mitochondria, which is your basically your batteries, the batteries of the human body, mm-hmm, are not working well. So how can the body repair itself and actually heal whichever disease it's facing?
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Another question on the relationship. Is inflammation implicated more heavily in some cancer cases than others?
For instance, this might be true. For instance, there is a saying called genes load the gun and environment pulls the trigger.
You're right.
So inflammation in a genetically susceptible person can make him at a higher risk of inflammation. For instance, someone has IBS, like, or inflammatory bowel disease, have polyps in his colon, and he's not eating properly. He's having a lot of bad dietary habits. He's having lack of exercise, and he's having genes that promotes for colon cancer. Then he's more susceptible of getting colon cancer because of the inflammatory lifestyle and food that he is having. If someone is like a prostatic, benign prostatic hyperplasia, and is not, and the multiple urinary tract infection all the time, and he has the most susceptibly detoxification defect or the gene, then he would be more susceptible of having prostate cancer. For the breast cancer in general, it's not, it's mainly about the detoxification of the bad estrogen metabolites. So inflammation can be really implicated in a lot of cancers, and mostly, yes, you can say like skin cancer not the melanoma, but superficial skin cancer. It can be an inflammation, an inflammatory process as well going on that was not treated properly, led to chronicity and then dysplasia. So instead of the cells renewal or regeneration in a normal pattern, it has regenerated in an abnormal pattern. If the body did not detect this abnormal pattern, it will keep on reproducing that abnormal pattern and leading to cancer.
Right.
So dysplasia and then neoplasia, which is cancer.
Right. So dysplasia just means not a normal pattern, and then neoplasia is actually become cancer.
Yes.
Okay. Good to get all the words right. Okay. So
I'm sure you know that by now, Robin.
Well, I'm just a member of the public, in fact, and I don't study this stuff. I don't. I take a great interest, of course, but I'm no sort of expert whatsoever. And I always like to take the member of the public's point of view. You know, if people get too technical, well, let's get in there and be clear, because it's very important that people really understand this stuff in order to, you know, feel empowered to make decisions.
Of course, absolutely.
Yeah. So how much do we know about this exact process of why and how inflammation can lead to cancer? Is this sort of, you know, well studied and mapped out, or is it still an area of research?
No, actually, there are if you study deeply the molecular pathways, the epigenetics, how the genes express themselves. For instance, there is a very important gene in inflammation. It's called nuclear factor kappa beta. And there are other nuclear factors that if they are overexpressed in a way, you know, when like your house is on fire mm-hmm. and you can't put off the fire. So what will happen? Like abnormal cells start to evolve. So there are a lot of genes responsible for inflammation and that are heavily studied in the cancer. And we are using nutraceuticals like curcumin, for instance, like ginger, like sulforaphanes, as an anti-cancer nutraceutical and anti-inflammatory to modulate this gene.
Interesting. Both at the same time.
Yeah. And mentioning curcumin, for instance, there has been a lot of studies that actually curcumin blocks pathways for 90 pathways for cancer development. Mm. So when me as a conventional doctor was giving one immunotherapy or one drug to block one pathway, if we use curcumin alongside chemotherapy or radiotherapy or even by itself in larger doses according to each patient, of course, that can actually block 90 pathways for cancer development.
Mm.
Amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing. And of course, it's extraordinarily important given that cancer, once it's put under stress, will always look for a new route.
Exactly.
Mm. Yeah, very interesting. The other thing that's interesting is that the genetic information you're talking about, you're always talking about what's happening to the person and then what their genetic makeup is. The two things are very important. And of course, in the past, nobody could really explain why one person could have, you know, 3 whiskies a day and smoke 40 cigarettes and live to 95. And somebody else dies of cancer when they're in their late 30s for apparently the same reason. We never knew why, did we?
Yes, well, the genetic actually information now is vast. Mm. And there are actually, so that the people can know, there are actually 2 types of genetic information that you can get for a cancer patient.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get genetic information to tell you which chemotherapeutic agents or immunotherapy that person can take. And there is another genetic information that can tell you what went wrong in the body that has led to actually the evolvement of that cancer.
Mm. So that's like genetic weaknesses, yeah?
Exactly. So we get both, but I actually now I rely on the other ones, the one that why the root cause of cancer.
Mm.
For instance, if a lady has a breast fibroadenoma, which is like a benign tumor lump in the breast, and I used to have 1,000 of people coming to me, ladies coming to me, like, we have this fibroadenoma. I told them, no, it's a breast mouse. It moves. It never turns into malignant ever. And we've always said that, and it's written in the literature all over. However, if that lady, I did a genetic testing for her, and she has this CYP1B1 gene, that actually promotes this benign fibroadenoma to become malignant.
Wow. Really important information.
Due to very, very technical details about how the body gets takes the good estrogen and gets rid of the bad estrogen in the body.
Mm-hmm. So you said at the beginning, we get both. Who's we in this case? Are you talking about conventional doctors get both or functional medicine doctors get both? Or who?
It's me because I'm both. So no, but conventional, like for instance, if I have like a very tough oncology case to treat, and I wanted to give her chemotherapy, and that person like had several lines of chemotherapy with failure, I would do that oncogenic molecular profile to see which chemotherapy is like suitable for that person. It's something like there's a very big foundation in the States. It's called Foundation One, upon which several other genetic companies have actually manufactured this like algorithm. Mm. Like those genes, they go better with that chemotherapy. Rather than for breast cancer, you just check the hormone receptors, the HER2 receptor, and then just give them this chemotherapy. So, but what I do is that I check which oncotherapy that should be given and which natural products should be given, so that when that person gets the conventional treatment, he would get the best efficacy of that chemotherapy with the least toxicity on the normal tissue. Mm. This is what every oncologist should do, okay, doing integration with a naturopath or study himself integrative oncology.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had a very interesting guest on the show a few months back who was actually, he was a scientist, and he was in his later life, but he's talking with a passion about the need for gene testing before chemotherapy, because, you know, he was saying literally there's some patients, the sort of middle point is that some patients it's guaranteed to do no good whatsoever, but there are also patients for whom it can be lethal, whereas somebody else can help. So the diversity of response to the same treatment is enormous. And if you don't know, then you give it to everybody who's got that particular cancer. Inevitably, there's going to be terrible, you know, fatalities and damage. So, yes. he's campaigning for, you know, people to take this seriously, or at least while it's not being taken seriously by the health service, patients themselves do the homework and get the tests.
Yes, absolutely. For I have seen patients that get horrible side effects from the anti-hormonal for breast cancer, for instance. And then when I do the genetic testing, I find out that they cannot metabolize that drug. Mm. So the level of that drug is increased dramatically in their blood serum. So it causes them severe side effects without the benefit that it should have been given to them.
Well, we can see this kind of stuff sort of in action day by day, in as much as some people, if they have a cup of coffee after lunchtime, they're up all night, and other people can have a, you know, sort of espresso after their dinner late at night and go straight to bed. So that must be just a difference in the ability to detox the caffeine, yeah?
Yes, absolutely. That's me. I'm a fast metabolizer of caffeine. Okay. I have the CYP1A2 gene, so I'm a fast metabolizer, and I can drink coffee and go straight to bed.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. All right, so now we've got a picture of the ways in which inflammation fuels chronic disease and cancer. Inflammation is kind of a very graphic description in that you can picture it sort of slowly cooking up a problem, a bit like a car engine or a computer or something that's running too hot all the time. So what I want to do now is to look at the ways we can tackle inflammation at the various stages. And firstly, and probably most importantly, prevention. What are the aspects of normal lifestyle that can either fuel or discourage inflammation?
So first, the gut. It all starts in the gut. So we have to heal the gut if someone has a problem with his digestion. So we start from the beginning. Mastication. Chew your food properly. Make sure that you have good acid in your stomach to digest that food. It's done actually simply by doing drinking like a glass of water early in the morning with a big spoon of sodium bicarbonate, and see if you burp before 5 minutes. That means that you have good acid in your stomach.
Okay, I didn't.
And yeah, it's very nice actually, and because with it, there are some bacteria like Helicobacter pylori resides in the stomach, and that leads to low acidity. And then when you have low acidity, you won't be able to digest your food properly and get the proper nutrients that your body needs to heal.
Right.
And then going down from your stomach to your colon and see if your colon is okay. Check your Bristol score for the stool. You know, there is this scoring system for the stools that I show to every person that comes to me. Like, okay, which is your stool? You have to poop snakes, as Dr. Terry Wall says. So it has to be soft, has to be long. You have to poop snakes all the time.
Right.
If someone has an erratic problem, like have abdominal distension, or has is not pooping snakes, pooping like stones, or have constipation all the time, that means that his colon is not healthy, and he should get like eat more good fibers, have high diversity probiotic, and heal that leaky gut, whichever the cause is. And this is like the functional medicine, because there is like a whole picture about a leaky gut and how and why this someone has intestinal permeability. It's like a whole lecture. And then when you fix the gut, then you eat properly. You eat, sometimes I need to know the blood type of that person, because if you're a blood type A, then you heal better on a vegetarian diet. However, one of the best diets that I have seen, and one of my mentors, Dr. Neil McKenney, always say a pesco Mediterranean. So fish, freshly caught fish, organic eggs, and a vegetarian diet. The Mediterranean one, you know, with lots of olive oils, good high fats. Because the good high fats, they give you a lot of energy, and it doesn't, and it actually fuels your mitochondria, your batteries.
Mm.
And so this is one thing. Avoid sugar totally, because sugar, 1 teaspoon of sugar, it paralyzes your immune system for 5 hours. And this is actually a scientific paper that was published in 1973.
Wow.
And nobody takes a look at it.
I haven't
because
heard that.
Sugar is in. Yes, I can send it to you. Mm-hmm. And I put it in every lecture that I put, because people don't get it. Like, we've got cancer, or we have inflammation, or we have this viral infection. Why should we stop sugar? Because sugar actually paralyzes the activity of the white blood counts to attack and defend your body.
Mm. That's a different kind of standpoint for avoiding sugar than the usual ones that are talked about, but a very important one nonetheless.
Yeah. And of course we do like, so I have to put my conventional hat on and then my integrative hat on every now and then.
Right.
But but for instance, if we want to know where cancer resides in the body, and the cancer is size is more than a half a centimeter, we give people intravenously radioactive sugar. This is the PET CT scan, the positron emission tomography scan.
Mm.
So we give them sugar in their veins intravenously, wait 45 minutes and have them scanned. If something like illuminates in the body, this is cancer eating sugar.
Right.
So because I have a lot of friends, like they get me like data from Dana-Farber and from the ASCO, and like, why should a cancer patient stop eating sugar? And they are telling me, no, Wafa, you're absolutely wrong. Here are very reputable organization telling you that people should eat sugar. But I'm sorry, I have like evidence, like an experiment. Yes. So yeah, whatever they say, I'm not buying this. And actually, sugar makes our mitochondria sick, because it causes a very high influx of oxidation.
Mm-hmm.
So we're always talking about eating antioxidant foods like dark green leafy vegetables berries, kiwis, apples, you know, and all these low glycemic fruits to eat. So the high sugar food, it decreases the immune system. It worsens both the mitochondria, the insulin resistance, and metabolic diseases in general. So even if you have a cardiovascular or a heart condition, you shouldn't be eating sugar. And then what did we say? So we ate, so the gut, what we eat, so the sugar, the gluten. So gluten, which is, you know, the wheat, the barley and all the gluten, but mainly the wheat, it actually, oh my God, it causes so many diseases that we should like make, you and me, if you want, we can make like an anti-inflammatory lifestyle lecture.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And which food to eat, which food not to eat, and why. And I can like make the like the scientific evidence underneath it so that people can go and read about it. But gluten causes every inflammatory process in your body, inflammatory bowel syndrome. It causes headaches. It causes behavioral changes. It affects actually autistic and children. And it affects the sinuses. It affects all the mucous membranes. So from the nose to the lungs to the GIT, everywhere. Why is that? Because this is not the gluten that our body was designed to digest. So if you have like a flash memory, you put it into your computer, and your computer does not understand what's in that, it will attack it. This is what happens when you eat gluten, because it's genetically modified, number one. Number two, they heavily spray it with pesticides and herbicides before harvesting so that the machines would have like an easy harvest, wouldn't spend effort in harvesting the crops. So we actually get genetically modified content that is heavily sprayed with glyphosates and herbicides, which are actually horrible, horrible poisons and toxins to our body.
Mm.
Yeah, then you have to optimize your vitamin D levels, especially living in Europe.
Right.
Because you don't get a lot of sunshine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you have sun, please don't use a sun block or a sunscreen. Just stay in the sun whenever possible. Because the vitamin D for cancer patients, it should be between 70 and 80 nanogram per mil. And I think that's 200 nanomole per liter. Huh. So it should be in the 80s because vitamin D is a super immunomodulator. And in a higher level, it's an actually anti-autoimmune agent.
Mm. Right.
And we have seen now the scientific evidence about COVID and the vitamin D levels. And if someone gets the vaccine while his vitamin D is very low, if he gets the live attenuated vaccine, he might actually encounter COVID because he has a very low immune system.
Mm, mm. Okay.
Yeah. Well, so many things like I can.
Yeah, I can
this
see.
Forever. You know?
I can see. Now, look, we haven't got much time left at all, and we've got loads more I'd like to talk about. I thought this was going to happen with this subject, but anyway, let's just go. Let's try and cover as best we can within about 5 minutes about during treatment. So it's unfortunate the majority of conventional treatments for cancer are, in fact, of course, highly inflammatory. This, I think, can be said of surgery, of chemotherapy and radiotherapy, the three kind of mainstays of conventional cancer care. I've seen some interesting studies over the years involving just a simple adjuvant therapy, natural or an established anti-inflammatory drug, making a really significant difference to the long-term outcome of, say, breast surgery. You know, just take an anti-inflammatory at the same time and the rates of recurrence plummet. So, are there safe ways to mitigate the pro-inflammatory effects of cancer treatments, all types, surgery, radiotherapy, chemotherapy?
Yeah, so first of all, stop sugar.
Right. Okay.
Because, yeah, so this is number one. When patients are taking chemotherapy, they should be stopping all sugary food, sugary drinks, etc. They should optimize their vitamin D levels.
Mm-hmm.
If they can, go on, if they can fast the day of the chemotherapy, that would protect, especially, I don't want to go now into a ketogenic diet because it's for certain types of cancer. However, when you have a low blood sugar, that sensitizes the cancer cells to be more vulnerable to chemotherapy and even radiotherapy.
Mm. Yeah.
So on the day of radiotherapy or chemotherapy, you should be fasting like at least 12 hours, mm-hmm. 12 to 16 hours. And there is a beautiful nutraceutical that we can use, which is the mistletoe.
Mm.
So whenever I have a patient starting chemotherapy, if he takes mistletoe or even radiotherapy, he doesn't have a drop in his white blood count throughout the chemotherapy cycles.
Really?
It's amazing, the benefits of mistletoe, because it's primes the natural killer cells, increases your inner interferon, and improves your sleep rhythm, the general condition of the patient in general.
Mm.
Melatonin is very important. So either you know the hygiene of sleep in a very dark room, you know the hygiene of sleeping, of course, or actually you give supplementations of melatonin, especially before the chemo and radiotherapy sessions.
Mm. Right.
What else? So there are a lot of things that can be done. However, if people are using vitamin C or high antioxidant supplementations, so that the conventional oncologists wouldn't freak out. So we just stop those supplements the day before, on the day, and one day after chemotherapy.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, well, look, that's good. I'm sure that's kind of a whistle-stop tour of something you could say a lot more about, but I think we haven't got the time, unfortunately. So I think, and also, of course, I'd love to talk about after treatment as well, because it's hugely important topic then as well, keeping inflammation in check. So anyway, that'll be for the next show. Inflammation part two. So anyway, thanks for a fascinating delve into this topic. There's certainly a lot to be said about it and a lot to understand. I suppose after hearing what you've said about it, I get the sense that a greater appreciation of the signs and the long-term dangers of inflammation could have a massive positive effect on public health generally. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, because it doesn't just impact cancer as me as an right. oncologist, it impacts heart diseases, it impacts everything, liver diseases, bronchitis, everything like kidney, all the organs in your body. So we have to learn how to be in sync with our body, listen to the signs of inflammation, and help it accordingly. There is a Hippocrates saying that, and this is extremely important, saying about like before you heal someone, ask him if he is willing to give up the things that made him sick.
Right. Good one. That's Hippocrates, is it?
Yes. Yeah. So you have to, when someone comes to me,
yeah.
I'm telling him how ready are you or how willing are you to give up the things that have made you sick?
Right. He's a smart guy, that Hippocrates, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
Amazing. And that was like a very, very long time ago, and we're still facing the same problem.
We are. Okay. Many, many thanks, Wafe, for a very interesting talk.
You're more than welcome, and I'm happy to be on board.
Great stuff. Thank you.
Have a lovely day.
And you. So I hope the odd contribution to the recording by one of Dr. Abdulhadi's children, one of the many hazards of lockdown life these days, didn't detract from your enjoyment of that brilliant interview. There certainly was much more to say about inflammation, so I shall make a point of speaking to Dr. Abdulhadi again on the subject not too long from now. Coming up at the end of March, 27th and 28th to be exact, is our Spring Congress, Nutritional Science and Cancer, Exploring the Increasing Consensus and Unanswered Contradictions. It's an online event, it's very accessibly priced like all Yes to Life events, and like all Yes to Life conferences, the lineup of speakers is impressive.
If you want to find out who's speaking and what they're speaking about, go to the Yes Life website, that's yestolife.org.uk, and click that Tell Me More button that's on the rotating banner at the top of the homepage. This will take you to the dedicated event website, which has full details of the 2 days, and of course, you can book your place there. If you enjoy the show, you'll be interested to know that we recently added a new feature to the Yes to Life website, a search tool to look through the vast array of past shows that are all still available to listen to. Go to yestolife.org.uk, scroll down and click the link to the Yes to Life show, and there you'll find details of all the shows, as well as the facility to search by guest, by topic, or by keyword. Thanks a lot for listening today. I hope you'll be able to join me again next week for the 300th Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye. Thank you.